Today is Reign of Christ Sunday. It's also called Christ the King Sunday. When I first heard this phrase, I kind of bristled a bit. I don't like the idea of kings and kingship in church. For me, it sounds outdated. It sounds paternalistic. It seems to equate God with the idea of being male. And my goodness, we are far beyond that conversation, where we seek God in everyone who is not limited by gender, by color, or by any stratification our society might assign. But we don't ignore this day either. Wrestling over the sovereignty of God is an important conversation that we need for our individual lives and that we need in the life of our church. There are so many forces in all of our lives competing for power. And I think it's something that we as a culture, as a people, want to focus on. We want those stories where the good guys win, where good triumphs over bad, where we can feel as though we are on the side of the heroes. So I will admit to you one of my guilty habits. I like to watch TV. I watch one program a night after Christopher has gone to bed. These are three of my favorite shows. The first one is The Game of Thrones. It's pretty violent. We have some bulletin waving. To me, it's an addictive fantasy, and I'm actually one season short of where the rest of you probably are, so I don't know how it goes. But there are all of these powers, people all over the world, competing to sit on that iron throne. They all believe that the gods of the world believe that they should be king. But I don't know. I root for the weakest one, as you do too, and I believe that they will win. That's why I keep on watching. Not about kings, but based here in D.C., another favorite guilty pleasure is Scandal with Olivia Pope, the Washington fixer. I want to be Olivia Pope sometimes, maybe you do too. She fixes people's problems, sometimes in ways that I would not agree with, but she makes it work. She is a fixer. She says she wears a white hat as one of the good guys. And then on PBS, there's Downton Abbey. It's coming back soon. With those breathtaking scenes about the Crawley family. And what I love about that show is that not only is it beautiful to watch, but it seems as though the most pressing issue is the question between the modern and the traditional. It's not so fast-paced. It goes to a simpler understanding, something that I have been craving lately. Something in Downton Abbey speaks to me about wholeness and goodness. Of course, there are problems in each of these shows. The rich will eventually win and the strong win. And even Olivia Pope, she's a woman of power. And same with the Crawley family, they're people given power. So that's not the Christian message. But it makes me think about what we crave and what we want to watch. Craving simplicity, craving the feeling of coming home. I think of warm sweaters in the season, of soup, of our bounty table, and the Thanksgivings that many of us will have the joy of celebrating. A harvest with real food and real ingredients made slowly. But as Linda said, we know that Thanksgiving is not a season of merriment for everyone. For some, it reminds us of the families that we don't have, the food that isn't bountiful, the opportunities that we wish we could just reach out and take. Thanksgiving isn't a season of merriment for everyone. And that's what we remember as a congregation, as a church. We hear a challenge in the bounty, from the strong and in the weak, in our text from Ezekiel and from Matthew today. You're challenged to lean into a different reality, a reality of hope, where there seems to be no hope, forgiveness but we just don't feel like it's in us. And unity, forgiveness, and hope, all examples and ways in the work of God. Ezekiel, the author of our text today, writes to an Israelite people living in exile, questioning the very character of God and the covenant that God made with the people. Ezekiel's purpose is to convince this people in exile that God is not powerless, but had destroyed Israel and the temple in order to prepare them for something new. It was a process of purification. They just had to believe it. They had to hope. So Ezekiel uses the image of the shepherd. When we think of the shepherd, we probably think first of Psalm 23. For the Lord is my shepherd. He leads me beside streams of still waters. He restores my soul. It is the bucolic version of the shepherd's life. It's a sentimental and comforting message to many of us. But the shepherd here in Ezekiel is not only one of comfort. This is the shepherd who stands up for his sheep, who risks his life fighting off predators in defense of the flock. This is the shepherd whose entire life is lived in the care of others. One woman at the early service reminded me that shepherds live on the outside of communities. Shepherds were not the popular ones, but they cared for the flock, for the entire flock, for their very living depended on it. Today we think about a shepherd who is powerful in the way of a king, but also compassionate and good in the way that we know our God of love. In the first few verses of chapter 34, which we didn't read today, God condemns the shepherds of Israel for not taking care of their sheep. They have fed themselves, and the sheep have gone hungry. In our text today from verses 11 to 14, we begin with the image of the gentle shepherd, the one who gives up normal life to take care of the sheep. Remember, they live on the outside of society, without a home, without running water, without a stable source of food and income. They live on the outside, giving up normal life, so each sheep can come home. Then in verse 16, there is a shift. You might have noticed it. It begins with, I will seek the lost. And then a clause later, but the fat and the strong I will destroy. This is the move from the pastoral to the prophetic. Ezekiel portrays an angry God, but important to note, this portrayal is not one of God who yells or is out of control. Pastor and author Mary Ann McKibben Dana puts it this way, we find no litany of curses, no ranting. God seems resolute, but weary, and almost grieved at once again having to set the people right on a path to justice. Like a parent intent on teaching her child, who remembers that calm consistency is the key, God does not fly off the handle. God just firmly and quietly corrects again. And again, end quote. The truth is that in Ezekiel's time, and in our context today, the vulnerable have not been protected. These are a bit of harsh words, but we know them to be true. We forget about the elderly, ones that are shut in, ones who are in nursing homes, ones that are in the hospital. We stigmatize the sick. We isolate those who are escaping oppression. We cast doubt on those seeking freedom. We turn a blind eye to those who just want a little bit more power because they have none. We pass over those with little education. We incarcerate those we fear, and we lay waste to the environment. And that just speaks to us as a whole society. That doesn't speak at the ills that I, as an individual, how I harm you. Because sometimes I harm you to make myself feel a little bit bigger. I get angry so I can feel better. Or at least I think I'll feel better. But it doesn't usually work out that way. So us as a society, us as individuals. At this holiday season, it's a time to reckon about how we respond. The season that stretches from Advent all the way to Christmas. It's a season when we're known for being at our very best and our very worst. I start with the worst. And you've seen those ads for Thanksgiving. They're not for Thanksgiving this year, but they're for Thanksgiving. Getting. I can get more. I could start shopping this past Friday for all of this stuff. Or I could shop on Thanksgiving Day. The advertisers say, get what is shiny and new. That which is from last year, it doesn't apply anymore. It's off trend. And when I shop and I go and get the newest thing, maybe my brother or sister thinks that's what we should do too. So it cut a cycle of just wanting more and wanting more, how we lay waste to each other and our planet. This year, we can have something different, as many of us have had other years. Some of us have expressed disgust at this idea of shopping and shopping. Verse 21, because you pushed with flank and shoulder and butted at all the weak animals with your horns until you scattered them far and wide, I will save my flock, and they shall no longer be ravaged, and I will judge between sheep and sheep. You could say, because you insisted on shopping early, because you made those with low hourly salary jobs work on the holiday, because you made those who count on those once-a-year deals go out in droves, because you encourage consumption of the brightest and the shiniest and the newest, you made people work overtime in factories and not get to their family, you created unsafe working conditions, you depleted the planet. But God also says, I will save my flock. I will judge between sheep and sheep, but I will remember all of them. Perhaps when I read out that litany of all the things we do wrong, you feel guilt. And that probably is appropriate for some of us, maybe all of us, for myself certainly. But this guilt is not enough. Maybe we think then of charity. Charity is important. These drives where we give food to those who are the neediest and clothing to those who don't have enough. We give other things away. We gave blankets to the refugees in Syria. And these are all so important. The weakest sheep among us depend on these. But as Christians, we cannot stop there. This is what sets us apart. Many theologians have written on the concept of solidarity. This week, I had the opportunity to read a little of the work of Ada Maria Assay Diaz. She lived from 1943 to 2012. She was born in Havana and came to the U.S. as a political refugee in 1960. She was one of the first to develop a Mujerista theology, a theology rooted in the experience of Latina women. She said that she was in exile, that she was a remnant, that she didn't have enough power to make change, but she could join on with other causes and other forces and goad them to change. She could change others, and the Mujerista theology could change the others and change the church through relationships and solidarity. She said that charity often refers to a one-sided giving, us giving out of our abundance, not out of our need. Solidarity is different. She says solidarity is not a matter of agreeing with or being supportive of or liking or even being inspired by the cause of a group of people. Though all those might be solidarity, solidarity goes beyond all of that. Solidarity has to do with understanding the interconnections among issues and the cohesiveness that exists between communities of the struggle. Solidarity moves away from the false notions of disinterest, of doing for others in an altruistic fashion. Instead, it is grounded in common responsibilities and interest, which leads to shared feelings and joint actions. And that's why I'm thankful for this church this season, because we are not missionaries to other places, but we are in partnership with sister churches around this globe, in Cuba, in Syria, in Iraq, throughout our nation, throughout Washington, D.C. metro area, with people who come to this church from many different ministries. We are partners in service to each other. We learn from each other. We're in relationship with each other. This message of solidarity is something for those of us who consider ourselves amongst the strong and for those who consider ourselves amongst the weak. We all can have relationships with each other. We just need to get to know each other. This is what Roger is talking about all the time with those relational meetings, right? Getting to know each other across the pews, across political divides, with people I just can't disagree with, but we can know them as people, know their stories, families, what brought them here, people who feel like they're in exile, and people who feel like they're remnant communities. And with everyone. That is the message of unity this Thanksgiving season, this message that will take us all the way to Christmas. It is a message of hope. It's a message of reconciliation. It's a message worth coming home to. It's a message that we can find in our table. It's a message of ultimate love for us all.